I walk a straight line, shackle and chain. Oh, gruesome Gertie is calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hill String Gang, Rango the Three.
Everybody, and welcome to another episode of Bloody Angola Prison Podcast. 142 years in the making, complete story of America's bloodiest prison. And I'm your host, Woody Overton. My brother from another mother deserves the day off, right? He's covered for me so much through so many things. And Jim Chapman, love you, but I'm going to knock this one out. Y'all, I want to continue on the escape episodes. Now, again, you know, it's pretty unique. I'm going kind of in chronological order since time began and prisons began and all that good stuff. So I left you last. I told you about John Dillinger, and we are going to move on to the year of 1935. And there was a French prisoner named René Belbenois who escaped from the penal colony of French Guiana on the 2nd of March, 1935, when he and five others took to the sea with a boat they had bought. Now, after a series of daring adventures during which all the other escapees were captured, Mr. René Belbenois, he actually reached the United States, y'all, in 1937, 2 years after he escaped. And then what does he do? He writes a book. I guess they didn't want him back, but he wrote a book, and his account was called The Dry Guillotine, and it was published. Now, Belbenois had written it in French, and it was translated in English by Preston Rambo. And guess what? I mean, back then, y'all, books were the shit. It went through 14 different printings in less than a year. So he tells a story. You know, it's pretty good. I actually know this story. You get a chance to go look it up. I can't remember what the name of the movie was on it, but I saw it some time ago. But pretty crazy. Penal colonies, that was a real thing. That's how Australia got started. The British shipped all their prisoners to Australia and left them. Yeah, survival of the fittest, motherfuckers, right? And, well, there was one in French Guiana, too. And I guess you do what you do. You got enough money to buy a boat and basically sail the world. Everybody else got captured except for this cat. So let me tell you about another prisoner who was Japanese. His name was Yoshi Shiratori, and he broke out of prison four times, y'all. First from the Mori prison in 1936, then the Akita prison in 1942, the Abashiri prison in 1944, and the Sapporo prison in 1947. And they actually did a novel, which was such a success that they turned it into a TV drama, and it was named Hagoku, H-A-G-O-K-U, and it's based on a true story. So let's talk about that for a second. 1936, we weren't involved in a war. So I know they were fighting with China, so I'm assuming that's where it was at. I've not I've not watched this series or read this book. So I don't know if he escaped from the Chinese all the time, but I don't believe we had too many prisons set up in the Pacific at that time. So anyway, all right, let's go to the next one. Fort San Cristobal. Cristobal is located on the top of a mountain in San Cristobal, which is very close to Pamplona, Spain. Built inside the mountain, it served as a prison, despite the fact that it had been obsolete since its opening in 1919 due to its weakness against aviation, meaning it could be attacked, right? By, it doesn't do you any good to have a fort when they could fly over and drop a fucking bomb on your head. Now, on May 22nd of 1938, during the Spanish Civil War, around 30 prisoners organized a mutiny for a massive prison break, and 792 prisoners fled, but only three succeeded in getting to the French border. 585 were arrested, 211 died, and 14 of the arrested who were considered the leaders were sentenced to death. Now, pretty dramatic, right? Most fugitives were intercepted during the following days. And in 1988, a sculpture was erected to honor the memory of the prisoners who died there. And the fort ceased to be a prison in 1945. Pretty interesting. Some countries, they chased them and killed them. And in some countries, they just let them go, I guess. But I'll take you to the next one. Colditz, that's Colditz Castle, was used as an escape-proof prisoner of war camp during World War II. But over the course, when it was open, they had 300 escape attempts, y'all. That's escape-proof. But 130 prisoners escaped. Now, they had 300 attempts, and during that, 130 were successful, right? But 30 of the escapees eventually managed to reach friendly territory. And to get out, the men had dug. They made tunnels and disguised themselves as guards, workmen, or even women. And they sneaked away through sewer drains. And they even built a glider to get over the prison wall. Now, how the fuck you build a glider where the guards don't see it? I don't know. But, fuck it, if I was locked up, I ain't gonna lie to you, I'd be trying to escape too. So, not kudos for their crime, but kudos for their ingenuity on trying to get the fuck out. All right. Lord, it's French people. They'd be loving it, right? So, Andrew Devigny, D-E-V-I-G-N-Y, and I'm sure I'm fucking that name up. He was a French resistance fighter during World War II. Now, what that was, y'all, when the Germans took over France, most of the soldiers were either killed or they escaped to England. But some people remained behind and they, attacked the Germans and just basically fucking harassed them. They resisted, they blew up bridges, they attacked supply lines, anything like that, right? So Andre was one of them. And he got locked up in the Montelukast military prison in Lyons with his cellmate in April of 1943. Guess what? He and his cellie escaped in April of 1943 also. So I don't know how that happens, because everything I know about the Nazis when they were in France, if you got caught and you were a resistance fighter, they fucking killed your ass. But this dude and his silly escape the Montelukast prison, and there you have it. Let's keep it French for a minute. French author Henri Charrière, and it's Charrière, they tried to escape several times, but they were unsuccessful, right? But eventually, they were successful in 1943. They made their escape. And this story, I have seen this movie. The story, Papillon, Papillon, was published. And then they made a film about it under the same name. I think that's what's his name that played Rain Man is in it. Maybe Dustin Hoffman. I'm not sure, but check it out. Now here, let's go to a movie that everybody's seen. But y'all know what? It's a fucking real story. And in the Great Escape, as it was named, all right? And the Great Escape was during World War II, 76 Allied prisoner of wars escaped from Stalag Luft III during World War II. And 73 of the escapees were captured, and 50 of them were executed by the Gestapo, while only 3 succeeded in reaching neutral territories. And that's, y'all, that's one, the movie with Steve McQueen in it, in the end scene, he tries to jump the bike into like Switzerland or whatever. But you know, that again, your sole purpose as a soldier when you get locked up was to stay alive and then escape. Well, 73 of them escaped, and guess what? They killed all of them except for 3. And a great movie if you ever want to go watch that. You know, sit somewhere right now in Angola, somebody's looking at that fence, or a correction officer thinking about taking them out and getting away, right? Escape is human nature. All right. Now, let's keep it in the same time period. And there was a thing called the COWRA, C-O-W-R-A, breakout. Now, during the COWRA breakout, at least 545 out of 1,004 Japanese prisoner of wars escaped from number 12 POW compound at COWRA, C-O-W-R-A, Australia, on the night of 4th of August of 1944. Now, out of the roughly 500 escapees, 231 died and 108 were wounded. And guess what? For the Japanese, there were some serious motherfuckers, right? That if they didn't succeed and they weren't going back, 31 of the ones that escaped killed themselves, right? Harry Carey, not whatever it's called, where they cut the stomachs. I don't know how they killed themselves, but that's a deal. They would rather be dead than go back. And 12 were burnt to death in huts set on fire by the Japanese. And 16 of the wounded, the ones that didn't die, that were just wounded, showed signs of attempted suicide. But however, right?
Hey, y'all. Podcasting about Louisiana's most notorious prison takes a ton of energy, and feeding my body and my brain with farm fresh, never frozen ingredients is as important to my process in podcasting as telling the story itself. That's why I choose HelloFresh. We all know home-cooked meals are so much better for you, but you don't always have time to pull it off. But with HelloFresh handling all the meal planning, shopping, and most of the prep, it's easier than ever to get dinner on the table quick and painless. No more endless recipe searching or spending money on whole jars of spices for only a pinch. With HelloFresh, everything you need to make delicious meals comes right to your door, pre-portioned and fresh. Plus, the included step-by-step recipe cards make cooking simple. I love opening that box and everything I need is right there inside. I eat healthier, save time, and actually enjoy cooking dinner because HelloFresh makes it so easy. I tried out the bruschetta chicken last week and was blown away by the taste. I mean flavor-filled. You gotta try it. For free breakfast for life, go to HelloFresh.com/FreeBloodyAngola. One free breakfast item per box while subscription is active. That's free breakfast for life just by going to HelloFresh.com/FreeBloodyAngola. HelloFresh is America's number one meal kit.
Right. You know, that's the difference between the Japanese prisoner of war camps and the Allies were huge, right? We weren't killing people every day. I mean, we had to follow the codes that they were supposed to be set up, how you treat prisoners and all that. And well, the Japanese being Japanese, they escaped, and this is what happened. Rather than go back, nah, fuck that, we would just kill ourselves. And you know, over time and escapes I've been involved with, it's very few. people who would rather die by cop or whatever than go back. Most of them give up. All right. So in the great Papago, that's P-A-P-A-G-O, escape, over 25 German prisoners of war escaped by tunneling out of Camp Papago Park prisoner of war facility near Phoenix, Arizona on the night of the 23rd of December in 1944. They then fled into the surrounding desert, but because the rivers in Arizona were mostly dry and not hadn't been navigable for decades, like, you know, I mean, fucking desert, right? Most of them were recaptured without bloodshed over the next few weeks. Now let's talk about that. You get your ass shipped all the way to the Arizona desert, and I understand it's your job to escape and all that shit. You're a German prisoner of war, probably don't speak any fucking English. They got you shipped in the middle of the desert, and you escape. Where are you fucking going to go? And then it's not like you can hitchhike and magically learn English and say, "Hey, motherfucker, I need some help." But there you have it. And no matter where he is, I told you, no matter what prison since the beginning of time, people will always try to escape. It's human nature. Human nature. All right. In the Acre prison break, that's A-C-R-E. In the Acre prison break, 28 members of the Jewish underground groups, Irgun and Lehi, escaped from Acre prison in Acre Mandatory Palestine, which is now Israel, y'all, on the 4th of May in 1947. Interesting. I never heard about that one. So that was after World War II. And I don't know. It's interesting. I have to look that up. Then they had 12 members of Jewish terrorist groups, Irgun and Lehi, escaped from the Central Prison. And today, that's a museum of underground prisoners, and it's in Jerusalem, Mandatory Palestine. And this was done on the 20th of February, 1948. So even a year after the first Acre prison break, and I never even heard of that. And I don't know who'd be holding them and all that shit. All right, let's go to more current times, and we're going to go from 1950. Which is after World War II, before the Korean War, to 1983. Now, what do you have happen? You got the Korean War. You got the Vietnam War, because it wasn't a conflict, it was a fucking war. You got all kinds of shit going on around the world, right? The Cold War would start with the Russians and everything else. So, the different times, all right? Let's go to 1955. In 1955... serial killer Edwards, and that's his name, Edward Edwards, pushed past a guard and escaped from an Akron, Ohio jail while being held on burglary charges. By 1961, he was on the FBI's 10 most wanted fugitives list, and Edwards was captured in Atlanta, Georgia on the 20th of January, 1962. So this dude got out for 5, 6, 7 years. Now, naturally, he's being held on burglary charges. He's figuring out, they're going to tie my ass into all the murders that I've done. And he escapes from a jail and stays out 7 fucking years. And I'm not telling how many more people he killed because of that escape. So, you know, prisons and jails, you're not there as a correctional officer to punish the prisoners for what they did on the outside. You are simply there to protect the public from them and to house them, right? And every time these people would escape, that means somebody wasn't doing their job. Not necessarily intentionally, but these prisoners have 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to figure out the weak spots to escape, right? So, sure, they changed the rule booklet after that. All right. 1955, John Patrick Hannan escaped from the HM prison, the Verne, on the Isle of Portland, which was y'all is in Dorset, England, right? Maybe that's where we got Portland from. And John Patrick Hannon, having spent 30 days of a 21-month sentence for vehicle theft and assaulting two police officers, and as of 2023, probably even as of now, y'all, I'm sure, as of 2023, he would have been 90 years old. And guess what? He's still free, right? As of 2023, he would have been age 90, and he is still outstanding, meaning he's free, making him perhaps the world's longest prison fugitive, which overtook the title. He took the title of American double killer Leonard Fristo's record of 45 years and 11 months as a fugitive. You know what? I'm pretty sure that motherfucker's dead. Or he's just a fucking genius. John Patrick Hanahan probably got run over by a fucking boat or something, and nobody ever found his body. Or he was in a different jurisdiction and got killed or something, and nobody ever heard from him again. But interesting. Interesting. All right. Let's go to 1959. And Frank Freshwaters, that was his name, escaped from an Ohio prison while serving a sentence of involuntary manslaughter from a 1957 car accident. Well, it took him a minute, y'all, to catch him. And he escaped from Ohio, and they caught him in Florida. 56 years later. Now, I don't know how you do that, bro. The involuntary manslaughter, that means like you hit somebody with your car and, because you're being careless. Yeah, the manslaughter is, or like negligent homicide is you so such lack of care that a reasonable person would have shown that you caused this accident to happen, right? Fuck, he would have been out probably in 10 years, but he was on the run for 56 years, and they'd lock his ass up to serve the rest of his time, which I'm pretty sure he died. But all right, let's go to one of my favorite stories. I've been here to Alcatraz. It was always fascinated me as a kid. Everybody knows this one, the movie Escape from Alcatraz with Clint Eastwood and the other guys that are in it. And actually, pretty much everything they said in it was true, which is rare for a movie. But Alcatraz was built to be the worst of the worst. And it was for federal prisoners. Most people don't realize that. It's a federal prison, or was. And they put them out there, and it housed everybody from just the worst of the worst criminals. I think Al Capone was there at one point even, but they housed the worst of the worst criminals that the federal system knew about, right? And it's kind of like where you send El Chapo nowadays, right? These supermax prisons. Well, it was like that because it's surrounded by water. It's an island. The water's off the bay. It's supposed to be too cold for you to go in the rip currents and all this shit. You're not supposed to be able to reach shore. And it's probably pretty true. But everybody knows this story. On June 11th, 1962, American criminal brothers, John and Clarence Anglin, A-N-G-L-I-N, and Frank Morris, that's who Clint Eastwood played, they escaped the Alcatraz Federal Penitentiary on Alcatraz Island using an inflatable raft, and then were never to be seen again. Now, it was never determined by the FBI whether they succeeded in the escape or died in the attempt. I have watched everything on this, not only the movie, they did a special on it where they sent investigators in to test and see if it's even possible to make the rafts like they said they did out of the raincoats and shit. And they had safety boats, and they see if it's possible to make the opposite shoreline. And they did age enhancements on the people. And there's lots of different rumors and lots of trains of thought on it. One being that at least one of the brothers made it and supposedly moved to Alabama and all this shit. But you know what? It's never been proven. So probably they were a shark bait in the bottom of San Francisco Bay. So, but anyway, Alcatraz, you know, is pretty cool place. Now it's a national park. They, of course, they shut it down because mainly because it costs so much to fucking run. You had to ship your convicts back and forth. You had to ship your correction officers back and forth. All of them, some of them live there. And everything, it's not like bloody Angola where they make their own food and have cows and raise their own vegetables and shit. Every single thing from toilet paper to fucking correction officers had to be transported back and forth by boat. And at a certain point, the federal government was like, fuck it, we're shutting it down. Right, man, it's a pretty rough place too. So there's a lot of, interestingly enough, there's a lot of people that did time in Alcatraz that actually talk about it. And it wasn't that it opened for that long of a period of time, but they didn't necessarily get sent there for just murders and stuff like that. A lot of these guys got out. They were, did federal crimes like bank robbery and shit like that, and they did their time and got out. So, all right, moving on. Serial killers. I know how I feel about them. In 1966, a serial killer, Monroe Hixon, escaped from the Manning Correctional Institute. And in 1967, he was added on the FBI's 10 Most Wanted Fugitive list, right? Now, let's talk about that for a minute. You go look at that list today, and it changes all the time. That list really doesn't do dick. And even the U.S. Marshals Division, where they track down the worst of the worst, I guess they put it out there to try to get somebody to report. But you get a whole lot more action, like off of America's Most Wanted and stuff like that, than you do this list. I looked at this list like twice in my career when we had someone we thought we knew or a tip that would come in about it that they were on it, but then we passed it over to the marshals. But anyway, so Monroe Hixon, he's a serial killer, right? Killed two or more people at separate times. He escaped from the Manning Correctional Institute, and in 1967, I told you about him being added to the list. Well, the body of a deceased farm worker in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, was confirmed to be him in 1968. So he made it for 2 years and got killed on the farm. I guess he was working under whatever. I don't know. I don't know how it got done. Maybe he told somebody. Interesting, though. All right. Let's go to the year after I was born. In 1971, a 45-meter-long tunnel was dug in 111 political prisoners, including the future president, Jose Mujica, M-U-J-I-C-A, escaped from the high-security Punta Caritas Penitentiary in Montevideo, Uruguay. And it was the largest prison escape in certainly in that country's history, right? That's pretty good. I don't know about that. Have to look, but totally different than where we live and everything else, totally different rules. But one of the guys that escaped ended up becoming the president of your guy, or your, however you say it. I had a dove hunt there I didn't take last year. But anyway, let's go to 1972. I'm 2 years old, crawling around, shitting myself in a diaper. I don't believe I had a pacifier, but who knows. 1972, six political prisoners escaped from the prison at Rawson, Argentina, and fled into neighboring Chile in a hijacked plane. 19 escapees who arrived late to the airport were recaptured, and 16 of them were later executed. Motherfuckers don't play in Argentina. But let's talk about this. You got all these prisoners, 6 and 19 is 25, all right? You got 25 prisoners who are escaping by airplane, all right? Hijacking a plane. This is our plan, boys. We're going to hijack the fucking plane. I don't know how they got there. Maybe we're fucking working outside the prison. I don't know. But the 19 of them show up fucking late. And they got executed. But I'm not laughing. It's not funny that they got executed, but it's pretty fucking funny. You show up late for your own escape. I mean, guess what? It's not like you're late and they could wait for you in the bus. It was a plane. And the other six hauled ass, and 16 of the 19 that were left behind got executed. imagine they put him against the wall and shot him. All right, 1973, 3 years old. Probably could say a few words. Maybe I wasn't. But in 1973, three provisional Irish Republican Army prisoners escaped in the Mountjoy prison helicopter escape when a hijacked helicopter landed in the exercise yard at Mountjoy Prison in Dublin, the Republic of Ireland. Well, you know, fucking genius for them, right? But I'm telling you what, 1973, helicopters weren't that fucking far advanced, especially in Ireland. But I guess nobody had ever thought that they could land a helicopter in the yard. And I guess the guards in the towers were either paid off and or they couldn't shoot worth a fuck because you land a helicopter, it's a sitting duck, naturally. But they consider themselves to be soldiers, and they did what soldiers do, and they escaped by helicopter. Crazy. 1974, I'm hitting the big 4 years old. Thomas Knight, a man awaiting trial for a double murder, escaped from the Miami-Dade County Jail along with 10 other prisoners. Now, 8 of the 11 escapees were captured within 2 days. But Thomas Knight, he remained a fugitive for over 3 months. And what did he do when he's out? Well, he committed another murder. And he was captured in New Smyrna Beach, Florida. And kudos to Florida. Now, it's a long fucking time, right? He escaped in 1974. He's a bad dude already from the jail, probably waiting to be tried for whatever. He escapes, but he commits murder while he's out. And this is 1974, 75, whatever. And guess what? State of Florida caught up his fucking ass. In 2014, they executed him. So there you go. Hope it was worth it. Well, let's go to 1975. And Billy Hayes, who is a convicted drug smuggler, escaped from the, it's a hard one to say, Lmrali prison on an island in the Sea of Marmara, Turkey, using a rowboat. Okay? He rows his ass off and he makes it to Greece, where eventually the Greece authorities deported him to the United States. I guess he's claiming whatever the fuck, I don't know, and the U.S. said we'll take him. But he wrote a book about his experiences called The Midnight Express, which, if you haven't seen it, it's a great fucking movie. Which was developed in a film in 1978, and it starred Brad Davis as Hayes, but I think everybody's seen that, or everybody in my generation. So on April 5th, 1976, they had in Segovia, Segovia, I'm sure I'm fucking these words up, they had a prison break, and 29 prisoners escaped from the prison in Spain's largest prison break since the Spanish Civil War. And I told you about that one. Now, the majority of these prisoners belong to the Basque separatist group, ETA. And also, the majority of the prisoners were recaptured in shootouts with authorities in the next few days, during which one of the escapees was killed. But they didn't catch them all. 4 of them managed to escape to France. Interesting. All right. Let's go to 10th of June, 1977. And this is a good one. Most everybody knows this. The June 10th, 1977, the convicted murderer of Martin Luther King Jr., who's a douchebag named James Earl Ray, he escaped from the Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary in Tennessee. Now, remember, he executed Dr. Martin Luther King in Memphis at that hotel. But he escaped along with 6 others. And guess what? you're pretty sure they're going to get this motherfucker, right? And Ray was recaptured after 2 days. He had been running and hiding in the mountainous forest surrounding the prison. Now, that place is kind of like Bloody Angola with the, Bloody Angola has the ravines and the hills and all that surrounded on three sides and then the Mississippi River. Now, Brushy Mountain doesn't have the river, but it's in the fucking mountains, right? And it's not like you're running up and down or running across a pasture to escape. But fuck him, and fuck him for killing Dr. Martin Luther King. Which, by the way, incidentally, I got to bodyguard Loretta Scott King in, I think it was 2000. No, it was like 1998. She came in February for Black History Month and spoke in Hammond. And I actually picked her. And I can't remember the lady's name. She was from one of the famous group, like the female singing groups from Motown. Anyway, picked them up and she came and spoke in Hammond for Black History Month. And she was really cool, by the way. And I picked them up from the airport, you know, bodyguarding for the event and all that, and then brought them back the next morning. So, all right, let's go to the 23rd of September, 1977. And you had a group of seven prisoners, including Patrick Kimumwe, Kimumwe, escaped from the fortified compound of the State Research Bureau, the Ugandan intelligence agency, during the rule of Idi Amin. All right, I don't know anything about all that shit. That one's in there, but I guess they're listing all the famous escapes, and it must have been famous for them. All right, let's go back to another serial killer, right? You know, most of your serial killers are very high intelligence. That's what the profile shows. And the preferential ones, right? Because they take their time, and they study their victims, and they're usually of high intelligence. It doesn't mean they're formally educated. When they take the IQ test, they test very high, right? I would submit to you that these serial killers I'm telling you about that escaping are smart as fuck, and they figure a way out. But serial killer Carlton Gary escaped from a low-security prison by sawing through the bars of his cell, right? Okay. And he eventually got caught, right? And guess what? You think that, you know, you're a serial killer. He's already escaped once. And I might have to follow up on this. But the police called him, and guess what? He escaped again. So, I mean, got it on your mind, you got it on your mind. I need to look him up real quick. Real quick, y'all. Because I want to hear. Let's see. They can't end there. Carlton Gary. Carlton, bear with me 1 second. Carlton Gary. So, I'm going to read to you about him real quick. Carlton Gary was an American serial killer who murdered three elderly women in Columbus, Georgia, and one in Syracuse, New York between 1975 and 1978. Though he is suspected of at least four more killings, and Gary was arrested in December of 1978 for an armed robbery and sentenced to 21 years in prison. And that tells a little bit more of the story, right? He escaped from custody in 1983 and was caught a year later. Evidence was found linking him to earlier murders, and he was convicted and sentenced to death in August of 1986. Well, the appeals process being what they are, that was 1986. Guess when they finally executed him? They executed on March 15th of 2018. So that's 86, 96, 2006, 22, no, 2006, 86, 96, 2006. So that's 40 something years later, y'all. 42 years later, they got him. Anyway, there you have it. So let me go. What? Let me do another one, and I'm gonna quit. In 1977, convicted murderer James Robert Jones escaped from a prison in Kansas. All right, motherfucker escaped, got away, and guess what? He stayed away for 37 years, y'all. And must not like the cold winters in Kansas, because he went down to Florida and he lived there under the alias Bruce Walter Keith. But the long arm of law catches up with you eventually, and he was arrested in March of 2014. Fuck him, right? I mean, he's a convicted murderer. It's not like he was a fucking bank robber. All right, let me do one more. On the 30th of December, 1977, I was just a little chap playing with my new Christmas toys. I probably had seen Star Wars the first time. But serial killer Ted Bundy, now you most famous serial killer there is, Ted Bundy escaped from prison walls while most of the guards were off for Christmas. He did so by sawing through the vent of his cell with a hacksaw blade, and he ended up in the chief jailer's apartment, who was away on Christmas break. He then stole some clothes from a closet and left the building. Now, of course, they caught him. But earlier in June, he had escaped from a courthouse by jumping out a window in the court's law library. Just goes to show you, where there's a will, there's a way, and they get it done, right? So I hope y'all enjoyed these escape things, all different stories. Doesn't have a lot of information on a lot of them, but pretty interesting. Just think about being locked up, like, the report came out last week at Bloody Angola. They filing suit about having to work in the fields because it's too hot and all this other bullshit. But just think about being locked up in the mentality with 5,000 other plus other convicts that are never going to get the fuck out of prison. And you either go along to get along or you plan your escape. So they're always, prisoners are going to do what they do. Convicts are going to do what they do. And at some point, they're going to run. And Patreon members, convicts, we love y'all. Thank you so much for supporting the show. Y'all, if you want to become a Patreon member, go to Patreon and type in Bloody Angola. And then we have different tier levels. You get bonus episodes and early releases and all this good stuff, gifts and all that. And just love and appreciate each and every one of y'all. And Jim Chapman and I will be back in the saddle again next week together, as of this time. And just love y'all. Thank you so much. And we appreciate you. And I'm Woody Overton. And for Jim Chapman, we're the hosts of Bloody Angola Prison Podcast. 142 years in the making, the complete story of America's bloodiest prison. Peace.
I walk a straight line, shackle and chain. Oh, gruesome Gertie is calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hill String Gang, Wrangle.